All right. Good morning, everybody. Full of the joys of spring this morning, even though it's not spring. It is the 12th of March. We have lots of news to talk about. We've got Jack Mutlante in the studio.
Good morning.
Jack. How are you?
I'm chilled, man. It may not be spring, but I definitely have a spring in my step.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. Last thing I want is to come in here in the morning and people are like, grumpy, grumbling, all that shit. You don't want that.
Yeah.
So you're feeling optimistic and positive and hopeful,
like
many people in this country are this year.
Yep.
With the elections and all the rest, I know that's a big focal point of what we've been doing on the podcast party and Democracy 101. By the way, today, since we're talking about this, you know, because I'm such a professional, I just segued it in there. We've got Lukhona Mguni, who is the Governance, Politics, and Development Specialist at the Rivonia Circle.
That is a very long title.
I know, but he does know what he's talking about.
Yes, he does.
He can pretty much answer any question we have related to this election that's coming up, the parties involved, the way that our system works. I mean, he's really, really smart guy. He's also a PhD candidate in political science at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, so he does know his stuff.
Yes, he does.
And he's been on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke about voter apathy, which is another subject worthy of us just prodding at a little bit more.
Yeah, just taking a deeper look at that. Because, I mean, there's I think a lot of South Africans realize just how important this election is.
Well, you think. But you've been talking to people on the ground. If you say, I think I get worried.
Right? No, well, I mean, I just, you know, sometimes you don't want to make statements that, I don't know, alienate people.
Okay.
So I will say I think, just to make it seem like there's a lot more in the works than there
really
is.
You're like these people who bring out the research surveys and then they couch the opinions in...
Yes.
In I thinks and perhaps and potentially and maybe and allegedly.
There's a real possibility that this could happen. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Did you see the Brenthurst Foundation, and we had Ray Hartley on the show not so long ago?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
They brought out their survey and then people were either like thrilled with it, like especially all the DA people are like, yeah, this is exactly right. And there's nothing wrong with this survey and it's terrific. And there were other people who were like, no. So the EFF complaining that it's just lies and bullshit.
But we all need a healthy dose of skepticism every now and again, you know.
So here's the thing that I thought was most interesting about that, because, you know, you can complain and say, well, this is not the survey I had asked for. This is not the survey I wanted.
Right.
But I saw an interesting post by, of all people, Gareth van Onselen, who's often said interesting things. He said, one of my favorite things about polls is seeing those who react and for whom the numbers don't feel right, or when those numbers jar with their personal Twitter bubble, which is only 7% of registered voters on Twitter, or the last dinner conversation. So if you don't agree, if you're like, you don't feel, in inverted commas, it's right. Or your personal Twitter bubble says so, or last night's dinner conversation was different to what those numbers reveal.
Then
the whole thing's just nonsense.
You know how I feel about feelings, right?
Well, that's why I bring it up with you.
Like, I really don't care much for feelings at all. 90% of the time they're wrong, and half of the 90%.
They change.
They change all the time. And for you to base your entire life, or at least the more important things that you have to decide based on your feelings, well, yeah, good luck to you.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
I don't know what the answer is, but there will be a number of polls done. There will be various parties that will bring their numbers and their predictions. Mm-hmm. It's good. The more the merrier, right?
Yeah. And
more the merrier. And you could take it with a pinch of salt.
Thank you. Because, I mean, it's not cast in stone, right? Like, The only numbers that we'll actually care about are the election
actual results.
That's it.
I saw the IEC are trying to tiptoe around the ANC's candidate list being revealed.
Oh, my God.
Although I don't understand why it shouldn't be revealed.
It was going to be public anyway.
Yeah, so this is a whole storm in a teacup that's really got no – I don't see the point. of anyone getting uptight about the candidate lists. We saw,
you know what?
On Saturday already, I saw the lists for MK, EFF, and ANC. Yeah. And no surprises.
None on any of them.
I didn't go, oh! The only thing I thought was funny was Carl Niehaus. Was it?
What is it? 187 or something stupid like that? Like, but anyway,
that's far.
Like, I think what these political parties are trying to do, in fact, perhaps even the ANC, is... No. To delegitimize the IEC to the point that when the election results come back, they're like, yeah, I told you. They stole the election.
Ignore them, they're liars.
Yeah. And it's like, guys.
You can see them already lining this up. And then another storm in a teacup is, and Rudy Tlabi was on this yesterday, like white on rice. She was all, bent out of shape about the DA asking the Americans to observe our elections. Now, it is the most important election since 94. Everyone agrees.
Yep.
We know that there are dirty tricks all over the world being perpetrated, including in the United States.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there are people who don't believe that the 2020 election was legitimate. So there are people who think that there was... the mail-in ballots were an issue, and they were.
Mm.
There are people who say, oh, you know, a lot of these ballot harvesters would go out to houses and they would just fill in four people.
Right.
And that also happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so the US perhaps has a unique point of view on this. They're not the only country that were asked to observe. In fact, people from all over the world are asked, and whoever pitches, pitches.
Right.
Anyway, people were all like bent out of shape. They're like, oh no, I can't believe that anyone would ask the United States to. This is clearly election interference from a foreign country. And we're like, I looked at this and went, are you living on the same planet we are?
Clearly not.
They've been asked by a political party here. It's like when the MDC in Zimbabwe says to South Africa, listen, won't you come and observe our elections?
Mm.
We don't all jump up and down and go, no, we're not going to get involved in the sovereignty of another country. You're there to observe the elections.
Doesn't that
mean
is it.
Influence them.
Yeah, I mean, what is the worst case scenario in these people's minds? What's going to happen exactly?
Well, I mean, these are just people who, and honestly, I'm surprised at Reedy because I think she's pretty smart, and I've always enjoyed my interactions with her, despite the fact that she, right in the middle of the hot part of COVID, decided to like try and set me up with some dude who had clearly been briefed on how to make me look like I was a COVID denier and an anti-vaxxer and all this stuff. Anyway, it ended up not redounding terribly in his honor.
Right.
And afterwards, she was full of apologies. So I can only imagine that it was her producers.
Perhaps.
Don't know. Or maybe she was involved. But I have no beef with 3D. And I'm just surprised that this is, of all the subject matter that's worthy of discussion this week,
that's what she chose.
That's what she chose. Now, I saw a story that's much more interesting. Apparently, Gwede Mantashe paid 200,000 rand to an umtagat to give Pravin Gordhan the squirts.
Like,
no, sorry, not the
terrible,
squirts.
Terrible stomach.
Constipation.
Constipation. There you go. It's like, wow.
All right. So don't pay attention to any other stories because that is the only one that matters to me. I think it's so funny. Like, imagine Pravin Gordhan, like, it's such a terrible. Constipation. I find that hilarious. So first of all, I can't believe that Gwede Mantashe has 200,000 rand to just piss away.
You can't believe that. That's the part of the story you don't believe?
The point is, this is why. And this tells you a whole story about a lot of people in the ANC. In fact, people who have made all their money through politics.
Right.
They don't know how to spend it. They don't know what they're doing. They will always end up poor. They will end up poor. Gwede Mantashe will die a poor man. Watch. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah.
Because the guy is prepared to spend 200,000 rand. Now, let me tell you what you could do for 200,000 rand. You could put in off-the-grid solar in your house.
Mm.
But of course, he doesn't care about that
because
we're paying. We probably have already for him.
Yep.
You could buy a car.
Mm.
Not the greatest car, but you could get a decent car for 200,000 rand.
Yep.
You could probably, that's your grocery bill for maybe even a year and a half. And that's extravagant living, right? Yeah. That's extravagant living. I'm trying to think. There's so many things
there's a lot of things. You could.
That's the school fees at a pretty impressive school for your kids.
You can do a lot of home renovations.
You could do loads of those things. There's plenty you could do.
There's a lot.
You can go on a very nice holiday for 200,000 rand.
My goodness,
Let me tell you, you could take your pick anywhere in the world.
And actually come back with things in hand. Like, so it wouldn't just be the experience of being there. You could come back with mementos as well.
Yeah.
For 200K, that's a lot of money.
Anyway, what does he spend it on? He spends it on a Sangoma stroke Umtagati to give constipation. I mean, this is like such...
it's like, what the hell is going on?
This is so puerile. My political enemy, Pravin Gordhan, I'm going to, instead of like taking him on, tackling him on the issues.
Yeah.
Because Pravin's not, he's no intellectual giant, let's put it that way. He's a very competent, he's competent at being a communist.
Right.
He's not very good at anything, but he's competent, okay, which in the ANC I know is a rare thing.
Mm.
But this shows you how incompetent Gwede is, that he looks at the scenario and he goes, oh, the only way I can get this guy out of my way is to get the Sangoma to give him constipation.
Right.
It's like, it's such a... You would expect children on the playground to be like that. I'm going to get the witch to curse you.
Mm-hmm. It's like...
I'm going to get the witch to turn your feet into cookies. That's what it is.
Yeah, it is. And the lack of imagination to me is just shocking. And somehow we're supposed to believe that Gwede and all of the people that he considers colleagues, you know, the people that he's not trying to give constipation to.
These people who sit on the cabinet together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're supposed to believe that these are the people that are going to usher us into some future that we're all going to be happy about.
Some guy who's so superstitious, he's busy backing up someone else's asshole.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
This is the kind of person we put in charge of a major part of our economy.
It's madness.
Because he was Minister of Mining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is South Africa's entire economy for years has been based on that. This is the man we trust. Anyway, I do think it would have been really funny if Pravin had got constipation. So there's a part of me that's like, come on, work Sangoma, make it happen.
Please.
Put that muti in there.
But it's not past me, the fact that he's Indian. Like, giving an Indian constipation is like going right up against it, eh? Like,
I didn't even think of that.
Seriously, you have a lot of high ambitions, man. So perhaps on that side of things,
that's very funny.
Good looking out, Gwede. But you've got a tall order in front of you. I can tell you that much.
JP says, and here come the jokes. No need for a Sangoma; they're all full of shit.
Yep.
Not hard to give Pravin constipation. He's already so full of shit. Commie, says Reno. Can't get a decent car for 200K these days. Those days are long since over. No. Not a brand new car and not something that's, were you talking SUVs and things? You could get a car.
You could.
I mean, it's not going to be the kind of car that you will be, excited to drive off the showroom floor. But let me tell you, if I gave you 200,000 rand and said to you, go and get a car, you'd be able to find one. And it would have electric windows.
Yep.
Have aircon, all of that stuff. It's not going to be a state-of-the-art, best-in-its-category car, but you get something decent.
You would.
And I'm going to challenge you on this when we get George Meany on the show, which he will be shortly.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk to him about exactly this. You can buy a small car plus a piece of land, says Donna. I don't know about that.
Well, if you go to Mpumalanga and
speak
to...
You buy some little piece of land, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, just a little tiny little chunk.
And then somebody says, don't you think Greedy is just trying to stay relevant? Okay, so Seamus, this idea that there are people in the world who are trying to stay relevant, because I often see this from always, really, I'm not saying this is you, but there are a lot of stupid people on the internet who accuse people who are in the news of trying to be in the news because they want to be relevant. Now, You either are or aren't relative by popular poll.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't try to be relevant. I mean, there are people who try for attention.
Sure.
But you can't try to be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the words are different. Attention and relevance.
It belies a lack of understanding of how the media business works, and that's why I'm here to explain it to you, so you don't have to keep saying things like this, Seamus, because I promise you, Reedy Tlhabi is not driven by a desire to be relevant, okay? And as much as you may disagree with her, and as much as that may be a very basic entry-level criticism of many people in the media, no one in the media is sitting there going, oh my God, I'm irrelevant. They don't think they're irrelevant. And it's not up to them to decide that they're relevant. It's like, what is the conversation today? And you know what? Today the conversation could be about something that makes me irrelevant. It doesn't keep me up at night. I can absolutely assure you that there are no people in the media business who are sitting there going, oh my God, I'm irrelevant today. What am I going to do tomorrow? What they're trying to do either is get attention in the moment for something that they're trying to publicize or sell.
Mm-hmm.
Or they've taken a very significant interest in a particular story, which propels them into relevance. To go around just looking for what is relevant means you'd be following whatever the trending topic on Twitter is, and that would be your designed subject matter for that day. You would just follow trends in order to be relevant to the most number of people on social media. It would be a horrible existence, and I can't imagine people would do that. So I don't think that's the prime motivator. And I just hate that criticism, because I've seen it about me and people I know, and I just think there's no one sitting there going, oh, I'm so irrelevant today. I've often looked at stories that are in the news and gone, there's nothing I can say about this.
Yeah,
I don't need to climb on this bandwagon, you know?
I don't know. I think there might be a couple of people in the industry
who are interested in being relevant.
Yeah.
Their main motivator.
Yeah.
Well, okay, well then I've misread that. But it's possible. I don't think it's the chief prime mover.
Yeah, definitely not. I don't think it's the main motivator for a lot of people in the media space, but I think there's a couple in there that kind of go out of their way just to be at the center of certain topic conversations. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, we put stock in different things, and certain people enjoy what attention brings for them. So,
well, I'm sure Pravin Gordhan is feeling very relevant
yeah.
in the fundament this morning.
I really wish we could call him and ask him how his stomach is doing. I wonder, an update.
If only he was, if only he had a sense of humor. I once bumped into him in Pretoria.
Yeah.
He was going up some stairs and I was coming down. I said, minister. Very serious man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's the kind of guy who like watches comedies.
Oh, he's one of those.
And enjoys them. I think he only watches sad movies. I don't think he knows, what funny is. Maybe I'm being very unfair, but that's the impression I get.
Yeah, he does strike me as that kind of man, to be honest. Like, he gets angry at birds or something.
Yeah. Mm. Tracy says, speaking of petty socialists, you need to get Dan Corder on. That beanie sporting confused mess of a man just loves spewing lies. He needs to be schooled properly by grown-ups. Who is Dan Corder? Mm. Who is he?
You don't know who Dan Corder is?
No idea.
Young dude, white guy. He's like a political commentator, if I can put it that way. A lot of people follow him on TikTok and YouTube and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And you know, I loved how he covered the Rugby World Cup. He had a lot of insight as far as that is concerned. And every now and again, he'll bring a topical issue to my attention. I enjoy the fact that he's not abrasive in how he comes across, but sometimes he can get things wrong. But I mean, every human
Everybody does. That's, I'm afraid I can't add any value here, Tracy, so I'll have to look him up.
Yeah, I think it would be a very interesting conversation between you and him, considering you guys don't necessarily see things from the same vantage point. I'd love to ref that match. That would be much fun.
Cool. Jean or Jean says, here comes a lecture. I think we've let you down, because I don't think we've gone into a lecture. Have we gone into a lecture yet this morning?
I don't think so.
No.
What were we going to lecture people about?
Okay, here's important information from Biasen. He knows what he's talking about. Too many black lentils in a biryani can constipate you. Okay. Quetta is paying way too much. He should have consulted me. All right, I like it.
Oh, man.
All right, in the news this morning, South Africa considers changes to work from home policies. What is the current policy?
I don't think there is one.
As far as I can tell, there are still people, a few people, who are working from home. But the majority of people in this country are back at work.
Yes, they are.
Well, the ones who have work.
Yeah.
Because we've got massive unemployment.
Yeah.
So the ones who do have work, I think most companies have reinstituted old rules. It's like back to the office, Monday to Friday.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, if it assists productivity, hey, why not work from home? And the as you said, the vast majority of people have actually gone back to the office.
How many people do you know who are actually disciplined enough to work from home? Because it is also an excuse for a lot of people to sleep in late, not get dressed properly, slob around the house, eat breakfast at 10 and take another breakfast break at 11, have some coffee every 15 minutes.
The question is are you...
Pet the dog, fetch the kids, drop the kids, go to the shops.
Oh, in between all of that?
I was working from home.
No, but in between all of that, is the work actually getting done? That's the only thing I care about.
I
really couldn't be bothered how you conduct yourself during the day. I couldn't care less. Okay? You could be sitting on top of your roof all day working from there, pretending you're this hardy doll or whatever.
Be lying in the sun.
And you know what I mean?
Sure.
My question is, are you hitting the points I need you to hit?
Well, the Public Service Commission, this is the news story, has conducted a study on the impact of hybrid work arrangements and service delivery since March 2020. The PSC is recommending the Department of Public Service and Administration benchmark with other countries to see how they're handling work from home policies. They believe the public service needs to prioritize digitizing operations and making sure employees have access to the technology they need to work from home. So they're saying work from home is a thing. And we need to have the technology for people to be able to work
to facilitate
from home.
That, yeah.
Which is all good and well, but there's some jobs you can't work from home on.
Yeah, they aren't.
I mean, what's a plumber going to do from home? What's an engineer? What's a doctor going to do from home?
Yeah. And those online consultations are a sham. I would never do that.
It's Sangoma's giving you constipation. Additionally, training programs on new technologies should be created for employees. Finally, the PSC is recommending that a cost-benefit analysis be conducted. Okay, so basically, they haven't even got a policy.
They haven't.
They want to do a cost-benefit analysis so that some consulting firm can come in and make a ton of money figuring out whether or not we should work from home or not.
Yeah.
So your feeling is you don't care if people are messing around as long as they get the work done.
Get the job done.
Okay.
Like, that's KPI. That's all I think about.
I mean, there is... Listen, I'm probably on your side on this. There's an argument to be made for productivity as opposed to office hours. They've done plenty of research already over the years about how many hours at work get wasted. Smokers, for example, constantly popping out for cigarettes, pretty much a third of the day that goes to smoke breaks.
Yeah.
Add to that lunch, you know, getting to work, traffic, being late, leaving early. It etches away slowly and surely at those working hours.
Sure.
And I think probably most people are only actually seriously productive for maybe 3 or 4 hours a day. The rest of the time they're padding.
Yeah.
And now because people are also on computers and phones the whole time, they're probably checking social media. They're not really doing work all the time.
So that time is shrinking.
I have a suspicion that if you actually measure productive hours, that real work is being done, it's nowhere near the work day, 9 to 5.
Yeah, without
there's
a
no, there's no way, right?
There's no way.
So in other words, if you are at home and all those other things that I spoke about get factored in, it's probably, if you're disciplined, easy to get your whole day done in 3 hours at home.
Exactly. And again, you if you can deliver on what we're paying you for, I've got no problem with it. Stay at home. In fact, you would be helping out a lot more people. That means one less car. to deal with in far, as far as the traffic is concerned.
Less petrol.
And less petrol. Less, you know, there's just, there's, I think there's an argument that could be made on either side of this. It just depends on how you view the entire thing. But well, like, I'm for it as long as people are actually productive.
There are a lot of companies that that do one day a week from home. So they'll say to their employees, we work from home on Thursday, for example. And then that's their policy. It seems to work for some, not so well for others. Some people like being in the office. For example, my brother has two little kids. He said it's impossible to work from home.
Yeah.
So he managed during lockdowns, but he said it was mostly really not productive because the kids just burst into your office while you're on an online meeting.
Yeah, and they...
We all know how that works, right? Then there are people who don't have space at home to work. They basically have a tiny little place that they live in and there's nowhere for them to put a desk and work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult. Yeah. I understand that too. And some people's jobs are not online jobs. You have to be present to do them. So Huge Reaction says, so much better to work from home. If your productivity drops, get back to work. Why not have the flexible hours if you must go back to the office, i.e. work from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. instead of 9 to 5? Well, that's one of the things that we've learned, I think, over the last couple of years. We've been able to experiment, which is good.
Yeah. And I'm of the opinion that we need to be living in a 24/7 economy in this country. There's enough of us.
Yeah.
There is definitely enough of us. And if you... There's certain jobs that would make a lot more sense in shifts. Like, for argument's sake, taxi drivers. I feel like they could be working 24 hours a day. And perhaps if they were to get like a...
Not the same people 24
hours
a day.
No, not the same.
You have accidents.
No. Yin-yang. Everyone gets a shift and all of this stuff.
Right.
And you would have a lot less speeding taxis and all of this other stuff. And, you know... We just open it up for 24 hours, you'll be a lot better off.
Judas says, my company allows me to work from home 2 days a week. When I work from home, I'm more productive depending on the time of the month.
Why? What's going on with the time of the month?
I don't know. Maybe she's busier at the end of the month than she is in the beginning. I don't have a schedule. What are you asking me for? Donna says, I can tell you the results. If you're self-employed, work from home. If you work for an employer, work at the office. Who can I send my invoice to? That's exactly right.
Yeah, that makes
Carl
a lot
says,
of sense.
I stand over the shoulders of my staff and scream at them in a German accent. I can get 8 hours.
The emphasis on the German accent is what threw me off there. But anyway.
He said a Hitler accent, actually.
Oh,
Lucky
okay.
says, coffee and tissue costs when people are in the office. Yeah, that's also something to think about. But I don't know. I mean... We're still talking about this. So to the what is it, the Public Service Commission? Guys,
Yeah.
You're a bit slow to the party.
Yes, you are. By like 4 years.
I don't know if you saw this, but NFL fans have suffered frostbite at a record-breaking cold game. And now it's March in North America.
Yep.
A recent NFL game between Kansas City Chiefs and Cleveland Browns turned dangerous for some fans in attendance. Apparently the game was the coldest in the stadium's history. Temperatures reached... minus 20 degrees with wind chill as low as minus 33.
Yes.
Watching a football match.
Oof.
According to a news report, several fans suffered from frostbite after the game and some were even requiring amputations.
Oh my word.
It is important to note that singer Taylor Swift, who was there to support her boyfriend.
Travis Kelce.
Yes. Watched the game from a luxury suite and was not exposed. Thank God they didn't expose Tay-Tay. To the cold weather conditions.
How would she play the guitar?
Not her. How would her fans react if she had to lose two fingers?
I imagine they'd be trying to find the amputated little bit somewhere.
Someone would make a shrine.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, and then you'd see it on eBay for like $10 million or something stupid like that.
Yeah. Mm. Bronwyn says, I'm starting a business from home with two children on a small farm. It's very difficult. I have to slap myself all day to get back to work. You see. Taxi drivers work 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day anyway. Extra 6 hours isn't that much more. Slippery pig.
Oh, my word. But he's got a point. That is true, actually.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though. And in fact, it was Herman Mashaba, wasn't it, who was in here the other day talking about a 24-hour workday.
Yep.
He says, ever since 2020... a lot of these fast food places and garages that used to be open 24/7,
they're not anymore.
They shut at like 9 at night.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never really got back to that.
We really need to, because if the workday is longer, you've got the opportunity to get more people into work. We alternate via shifts. You know what I mean?
Mm.
I think that would change the unemployment a little bit. I think so.
So it is a Tuesday morning, which means we also get to check in on the window seat with travel.co.za. Now, sometimes we talk about these incredible destinations. Sometimes we talk about the business of travel. Sometimes we talk about things that can go wrong, things mm-hmm. that can go really well.
Mm-hmm.
We speak to people who've been to incredible places. And this man has been to probably more incredible places than you and I will if we live in our two more lifetimes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. But we've had him on the show before, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Claude van Kiersbilk back to the studio. He is the COO of Tourvest Travel Services. How's it, Claude? How are you, man? Nice to see you.
Thank you very much. You too.
Yeah. So what's been happening? You've been busy. Hell of a start.
Very busy,
to the year.
Hey? Yeah, it's been a good start. Thanks, Gareth. We're very blessed. Thank you.
So, Claude, you are also the man who can tell us about things that have to do more with the way that the travel business works.
Yeah.
Most of us actually have no idea. I mean, people go on, maybe they go to travel.co.za, they book their things, their flights, their accommodation, all this stuff.
Or their business trips.
Mm. And if it's the business trips, there's sometimes a whole department in a business that deals with all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But once that's done, we kind of forget about it. We might tick some little box that says insurance, but there are things like duty of care and risk management that are a big part of this, and it's a massive, massive money spinner in the travel business. What do they mean, and how does it affect ordinary people, and how does it affect companies, and how does it affect the service providers? Because last time you were in here, you told us about some crooked company that had taken people's money. They never got their holidays. And there are a lot of crooks out there.
Yeah, Gareth, some exciting topic, duty of care and travel risk management.
This is very important.
But extremely important, you're right. I mean, the well-being of your employees in most companies is paramount. So really, I mean, within the context of travel, duty of care is the legal obligation.
Yeah.
To research, plan, and implement a strategy to mitigate the risks involved for employees traveling on business.
Right.
So a company's duty of care will contain a statement of fit of its commitment to care for its employees and how far that extends. So often, you know, the concept of duty of care and risk management are spoken about, you know, together, but they're actually quite different.
Okay.
So duty of care can really be defined as the moral and or legal obligation to ensure the safety or well-being of others.
So in other words, if I've decided to send Jack to Syria right now.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, how?
If I decided to just book him tickets to Damascus, economy class, he's going to arrive, there's no one going to fetch him at the airport.
He's got a meeting at 8 o'clock the next morning.
He is going to arrive in a war zone.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen to him on the ground? And then I'll say to him, you must book your own flight back. There's clearly no duty of care going on
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, unless you're in the security industry and you might be needed there.
Or I'm a psychopath.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I mean, even if you're needed in the security industry, whatever your business is that's booking you there would make sure that they at least look after these details.
Yeah.
And it's massively important.
And in most companies, it's a massive program that they've designed to ensure the safety, you know, and just for a Mr. Average traveler that's traveling to any country in the world, that kind of duty of care is needed so that you ensure you know where your traveler is or where they are, what are they doing, where are they staying, are they traveling by car, by train, you know, so that you know at any point in time where they may be.
Is it almost like a duty of care that a parent has towards a child?
I think it's exactly the same. No. I mean, you know, you would apply very similar principles in wanting to know where your travelers are at any time. Because if something happens at that point in time, it could be a terrorist event, right? Oh. Which we've seen numerous times. It could be a natural disaster, you know, a tsunami. You can name all those that we've seen before. You want to know where your business travelers are, you know, and you want to be able to assist them when these events occur.
In the horrible instance that, excuse me, that one of those kind of events happen, who's liable at that point in time?
Well, that's where the legal obligations do come in, and it varies from country to country, right? The legalities around that. But it's each organization's obligation to know what those legal obligations are.
So for example, most of these companies that would book through you, they would have a policy in place.
Absolutely.
And that policy would be very detailed. It would go into what happens if, when, where.
They'll have a travel risk management program.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want, as the company, to have made a bad decision and then the family of that person or that person themselves then comes after you.
Yeah.
So the policy's made clear to people beforehand.
Yes.
But okay, so he's asking whose responsibility is
ultimately it? It's the organization's responsibility. Right. You're sending them to to a meeting or to a conference or whatever, and you need to make sure that they're going to get there safely, they're going to get there in good shape, and that they're going to be able to conduct the business on behalf of the business, right? Mm-hmm. And if something goes wrong, again, it's reasonable to expect that it's their obligation to look after them.
And what is the obligation of the travel management company?
So the travel management company plays quite an important role, because if, and I'm assuming here that the travel is booked through a travel management company, they sit with all the data, right? They know exactly at any point in time, within reason, as to where they are at any point in time. So you're going to be able to assist the organization or a company that the organization has employed, an outsourced company, and there are various companies that offer these services, travel risk programs. The travel management company can then provide that data across so that the outsourced company knows exactly where the traveler is. So it really starts with the travel management company in terms of the data, because everything is booked through the travel management company.
What would you will this cover someone who gets very sick?
I mean, that eventuality.
If you were Praveen Gordhan and they paid a Sangoma $200,000 to give you constipation, and you're on your flight to London, you've got terrible, terrible constipation on the other side, and you can't move.
I mean, there are companies that organizations subcontract, like a company like ISOS, International SOS.
Yeah.
And they will then look after that traveler to ensure that he gets the right medical care. And if needed, repatriated back to South Africa or whichever country he comes from to get the required medical treatment.
I've always wondered about that, because that's going to be like the nightmare, right? You've booked this trip, and maybe it's for business, maybe it's for personal reasons, and you get there and you're immediately like bedridden.
Mm. Yeah.
Or you hurt yourself, you break a bone or something.
Broke a leg or something.
Now what are you going to do? Because
I've experienced that myself. And this was before companies used to consider duty of care an important part of business travel.
I heard they just left you in the desert.
No, I went on a trip to Bali in Indonesia to a conference, and I must have caught some sort of bug, and I could not get out of bed, and I was on my own. I mean, yes, I could phone home. It was in the days before cell phones, and really had no one to help me, right?
How long were you down for?
I was down for 3 days. I didn't attend 1 minute of the conference, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, you know, in today's world, you're going
to... I'm laughing now, but it's a shit thing to happen.
It's not fun, I must be honest. But nowadays, companies who subcontract these organizations, like a company like Riskline or International ISAS, and they actually have remotes with them. You travel with a remote. The minute something goes wrong and you feel like you're in danger or you're ill, you press the remote and that organization is onto you.
That's incredible.
They call you straight away. I mean, obviously it's easy now with mobile phones, etc. Sure. They call you straight away. They assess the risk or the illness. And they just get doctors onto you. They get support structures around you, repatriate you if you need to, etc. So I mean, many of our organizations that we manage from a travel management point of view, you know, have these kind of services that help them, that help their employees to ensure that they're well looked after.
I didn't realize that there were actually organizations that did this all the time, 24/7. International SOS. That's
International SOS Risk Line, to name, and a couple of other Northcote Global Solutions.
Are there specific? I know that there are lists of countries that are considered dangerous to travel to.
Yeah,
and they publish those. They update them all the time, right? So, for example, if you wanted to go to where Donna, one of our listeners here in the comments, she's in Libya at the moment. Mm. People wouldn't recommend Libya as like a holiday destination. It's on some kind of list where there are special advisories around what you should and shouldn't do, right?
So, I mean, you know, companies operate in different markets around the world and different countries, so they will assess those risks before any traveler departs. So the obligation from the organization is to say, right, we need you to go. Let's take, for example, Libya. We need you to go to Libya. Yep. However, here are the risks that you need to be aware of. You need to make sure that you've read those, understood those. I mean, clarify anything that you need to before you travel, and be very comfortable as an employee that you now want to travel on that trip. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it is up to you to travel, right?
You can decide.
You can choose not to go. I mean, we don't know what those consequences could be, but you could choose not to travel. So if you do choose to travel, make sure you're aware of the country and the city you're going to, what the risks are associated, and take it from there. I mean, there are organizations that will have banned countries, right? Mm. So the minute a travel request for that country is requested, well, it goes through to the risk and compliance leader of that organization, and he'll turn around and or she'll turn around and say, sorry, you're not traveling. You know, it's a banned country.
I'm always keeping my eye on the money. I need to find out who's paying for what and how. Would the costs of all of this be put on the person that's traveling or the company itself?
No. Look, there's insurance that covers that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. And certainly medical insurance is important.
Is it possible to go overseas without taking out insurance?
It is possible, but it's a massive risk.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to know what it costs to have one night in a hotel. In a hospital. And you're going to be quite, you know, a massive cost.
It's ticking a little box for some people, right? Because they leave and then they don't think about it. And they go, okay, well, I don't need this. Mm.
And then if you're joining a company, let's say you're a new joiner in a company, or you're looking to join a company, and you know that your job or your role is going to entail travel, and particularly international travel, and maybe even African travel, well, best you have a look at their travel risk program before you join that company. You know,
there we go.
Those are the kind of things. Instead of just looking at, okay, this is how much going to be paid.
Claude, we're going to send you to some really cuck place. You're going to get all kinds of bugs. You're going to come back with dysentery, and then it's your problem.
A good weight loss program. I mean,
what's the worst story you've heard about this? Like people who've died on a flight, and
I mean, look, there's all those kind of things, but I think the most common is falling ill. You know, you pick up a bug, you pick up some sort of infection or whatever it is, and
Ebola virus.
Yeah, and it's those sort of things that are most common. You know, especially in business travel. I mean.
Here's something interesting. Slippery Pickle says, what if I were planning to go to Myanmar? What would my insurance cost? The hotel costs there are quite cheap. I mean, does it vary depending on the risk?
Insurance companies are very clever people, let's be honest. They look at the various countries, they assess the risks and then the associated costs, you know.
What about this one from Bebop Williams says, there is a very bad relationship between airlines and TMCs where airlines constantly penalize them through debit memos. ITA has never been resolved by the leaders of the industry. So what's that all about? Is that someone who knows?
Gareth, look, I mean, that's way off the topic of duty of care and risk management. But we do have, when a travel agent either makes an error knowingly or not, and let's say you've booked an economy class, a cheap economy class ticket, and you might have made an error on that particular booking, an airline is entitled to, through what they call an IATA resolution, to charge the travel management company the correct fare, right, for that particular trip. And there's no discussion. It's just a charge that comes back. And you, as the travel agent, can then appeal that charge. And if you're in the right and if you've really done the right things, you can maybe have that reversed, right? Mm-hmm. But that's, yeah, I mean, that, okay, well, it's off topic.
Completely. I know you can answer almost any questions. That's why I threw it. All right, well, listen, let's just be aware of this stuff. Let's remember that there are risks, like everything. You know, there's a risk every time you get into your car. But that's why you need insurance.
But key is also making sure that you use a travel agency, number one, when you're booking. That your travel agency understands what duty of care means and risk management means. Do they have products that can support an organization with their risk management policies? And, you know, all the data's there. So if you're booking online yourself, no one knows who and where you are, right? So when you need help, you're likely going to try and speak to a hotel or someone in a hotel or someone in an airline. Try finding an airline call center today. You're probably not going to last with your virus that you just picked up before that call gets answered, you know. So very important to choose companies like ourselves that can manage your travel program.
And do you have people who can answer questions if people aren't sure about this?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, so we specialize in those kind of programs, right? That's the value that a travel management company brings, and the technology that we add to solutions to manage those kind of programs. And then if it's a lot more intricate and more detailed, then we will find a company that specializes and has as it at its core, you know, risk management and travel duty of care programs.
That's very good to know. So Claude is the COO of Tourvest Travel Services. Of course, we've done lots of interesting stuff and we've done all the fun stuff, and we thought it was probably necessary for you to know some of this stuff as
serious stuff.
Especially if you're the person at a company who's doing all the corporate bookings, if you're somebody who's thinking about those incentive trips this year, you ought to be aware of this stuff, because you don't want to end up with a whole lot of problems down the way no solutions. So there we go. If you need more information, you can go along to TTS. We'll post all the links in the show notes, and you can also find out more by going to cliffcentral.com. There's a whole page of all of our window seats, which have been going for a little while now, so you can find out more on that or book your trips through travel.co.za. Very good. Thanks, Claude.
Cheers. Thanks very much,
Gareth. Nice to see you, man.
Nice to see you.
Awesome.
Again. Thank you.
Right. Well, we've got Democracy 101 coming up in a short while. That's going to be exciting because we're going to be talking to Lukhona Mguni, who is, of course, from the Rivonia Circle and currently is doing a PhD in political science. So we've got some interesting things to ask Lukhona about what happens with regard to elections, voter apathy,
that kind
loads of interesting stuff. Also, the candidate lists that were leaked this week.
Ooh.
What's that all about? The multi-party charter, whether they should be asking for election observers, which some people were hot under the collar about yesterday.
Yeah.
Is there a threat to the integrity of the election? Despite the fact that you and I have now spoken to three different people from the IEC.
Yep.
All of whom I think have done a really good job of explaining what they do. They don't seem to me to be crooks.
Not at all.
They know what they're doing. Mm. But there are still lots of people going, oh, but the integrity of the election. So maybe we'll ask someone who's not in the IEC to evaluate that for us.
Yeah. And look, at least we were fortunate enough to be in a position to ask questions. Mm. And all of the people that tuned in to those interviews, I imagine those people don't have a problem with the IEC. I think it's the most uninformed people that are making these things up. You know
probably
what I mean?
Right. No, it's like the same people who complain about something but never actually do anything about it.
Yep.
Ah, it's that terrible, but I'm just going to sit here and moan about it. 31 senior ANC leaders will not be returning to Parliament. Here's an interesting topic for discussion this morning. Making a significant change in the party's leadership includes prominent figures like Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma, Pravin Gordhan, Naledi Pandor. These are all people who are leaving office.
Mm.
And the ANC has acknowledged the contributions of these leaders to the party who have served in various leadership positions over the years. The departure of these people from Parliament is likely to lead to speculation about the future direction of the ANC, particularly as they prepare for the election. It will be interesting to see who they put forward as replacements for these more experienced leaders, whether the party can maintain its parliamentary majority.
Do you know, I feel like experienced in this paragraph just means they were there. You know what I mean? They were front and center to see what was going on?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like yeah. I was there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And this comes like maybe 10 years too late. Hearing that
I don't think we're gonna miss exodus. Yeah, you're gonna miss anything from the experience of having Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma and
Pravin Gordhan.
And I'm not gonna miss them either.
You know what I mean?
Good luck.
Mr. William Marisha made his feelings clear about Naledi Pong.
Hong.
I think they should have stopped back then already. But you know, I don't know. Like the ANC is the weirdest organization to me because it seems like every time you expect them to do the right thing, they do the complete opposite. And when you're like, you know what, fuck it, it's fine, I give up. That's when they show up and be like, okay, we are bringing in changes. From the top to the bottom, it's like, guys,
Mapelo in the comments says we should ask the Russians to help observe our election. They're the most trustworthy people we can find, right?
And if anyone has a problem with what the Russians decide to tell us,
too bad. You'll just get killed.
Yeah, you'll
in a Siberian prison camp.
Yeah.
You want to know what the future of the taxi industry looks like. Now, I've never thought about this because as far as I can tell, like South Africa is a very strange place. The taxi business is never going to go anywhere.
Yeah. But it has to evolve.
Well.
And I'll tell you why.
Better taxis.
Yeah. Well, first, I mean, forgetting the obvious, right?
We're not talking about an industry that wants to change. I mean,
No. It has to.
These are guys who complain when Uber comes to South Africa, when Bolt and Lyft and all of those.
I was actually thinking about those things when I was.
They don't want any change.
They don't, but they have to because, like, e-hailing has disrupted a lot of taxi operations, if I can put it that way. And to the point whereby there's a lot of these guys that drive Bolt and Uber and whatnot, they know that there's certain places that just
you can't go to,
right?
Because the taxi buses and the taxi drivers will kill you.
Right, but slowly that is changing, especially amongst the customers rather than just the drivers, right? It's become a thing of, wait, this is my money. I am going to choose to spend it with whoever I choose to spend it with, which makes me wonder if it is time for the public in large to put a bit more pressure on the taxi associations. Because, I mean, what happened in Ekurhuleni last week?
How do we do that?
How do we do that? We keep our money. Long story short.
So we just don't use the taxis.
Give them a middle finger. We catch a bus. We catch a lift with somebody. I think for the first time, it would be interesting to see how the taxi associations would react to the public striking
against them.
You're going to war
with these guys. You must
Let's do it.
Just watch out, Jack McLean.
No, and I'm saying, and I bring this up because, as you know, we've done a couple of things with Halfway Toyota.
Yeah.
And they're going to help us facilitate some of these conversations with the taxi industry.
About how they should be changing for the future.
Or at least for us to get a deeper understanding of why they behave the way they do.
You see, I find the taxi industry in South Africa fascinating.
I don't care
who says that that's it's not. You're not paying attention. It's like the most incredible thing. It just, and you saw it during those riots in KZN what, year and a half ago now.
Mm-hmm.
Because who came to the rescue? Taxi industry.
Yep.
Taxi industry.
And when you think about the sheer number of people that they move from one place to another on a daily basis.
And we don't really have a public transport infrastructure to speak of.
No, we really don't.
You know, we can talk a little bit about Rea Vaya buses and we could talk a little bit about the Gautrain and all that stuff, but that's not how the majority of people in this country get around.
It's not. And I was also thinking about how the taxi drivers themselves. Like one of the comments mentioned that they're up at 4 a.m. and all of this stuff. Look, I've got friends who I grew up with who are taxi drivers.
Yep.
And let me tell you something. It is more often than not a thankless job because of all the issues we have with how they drive on our roads. But we often don't consider the fact that every taxi driver is given a certain amount that they have to hit every single day.
Yeah.
right? So for argument's sake, it could be 700 Rand for one taxi driver every day. Anything you make above that is what you keep. But we don't consider the fact that this person needs to put petrol into this car. Mm-hmm. If anything happens to the car, he will be held responsible for the repairs onto it. So they've got all of these things coming in every direction, which is why I brought up the 24-hour thing earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they work in shifts and the economy is running 24 hours a day, we would have less people traveling during the day.
Right.
So traffic would be a lot easier to deal with.
And we wouldn't have such tired drivers.
Exactly. And they wouldn't have to, they wouldn't feel the need to drive in the yellow lane just so they can drop off that load so that they can make their way back to make the 700 Rand that they need to make for that day.
Sam comes into the comments and says, "Morning, I'm late. What did I miss?" Sorry. A whole hour.
Yeah.
Pretty much a whole hour.
Where do we even start?
Lucky Motlapeng says, Santaco have their own e-hailing service called Taxi. I saw one this weekend, so they're trying to keep up.
They're trying to keep up.
Well,
it's an attempt, I guess.
How do you book a Bajaj? That's one thing I haven't worked out yet.
I don't know. I think they're on Bolt or something like that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Do you know, I actually got in one the other day. It's the strangest feeling ever.
You got into one?
Yeah, I have. And it feels like You are in the seat of, what do they call those little, not a carousel, man. You know those spinning
those seashells? Bumper car type.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. You are in. You don't feel like you're safe at all in that thing. It feels like if a strong enough gust of wind shows up, like you are absolutely screwed. It's crazy.
Cheap though.
It is.
And therefore, for some people, maybe worthwhile.
I think I
wouldn't be surprised if they're stealing a bit of taxi business.
Yeah, but like two passengers at a time.
And
really?
Short distances.
Like really short distances.
Yeah, not long distances. Listen, there are a lot of them on the road. I see them every day.
And I feel like they're so out of place in this country. They would have been so much better off in like India or like...
Sure.
You get what I mean?
Don't underestimate the fact that a year ago,
mm-hmm.
maybe 2 years ago, we didn't have one on the road. Now,
at all, yeah.
Now you see them all the time.
Yeah.
I know that in Cape Town, they don't have them at all. So the Cape Townians don't know what we're talking about when we talk about this. But it's a real thing. And if you haven't seen them in Joburg, then
it's a tin
you must be living
wheels.
Under a rock. Yeah, well, yeah. You can criticize it and they do look ridiculous, but
they do.
People are using them.
Yes, they are. And what I found absolutely hilarious about being inside one of those things, the gears are so funny. Like, you know how we have gears that are like 1, 2, 3? You know what I mean? There's just straight
work?
Up and down.
Like, oh, really?
You go from gear 1 to neutral to gear 2, then gear 3, then gear 4. It is hilarious.
I haven't seen one. Hilarious. I haven't been in one. I need to get into one.
Yeah, you should.
Slippery Pickle says, with the heat that we've had this week, I'm inclined to work at night. I agree. Mm. Jesus, yesterday I could not do anything.
Mm.
It was so goddamn hot. Now, I don't have aircon in my house, and I'm not going to put that in. So last night, I managed to get to sleep eventually.
Yeah.
But this heat is just unbelievable. It's stifling. You can't do anything. Apparently, Wednesday is going to be the hottest day of all.
Really?
Yeah, tomorrow. So
oh, yeah.
Ready.
They've been a couple
get
of heat wave.
They say that
tomorrow's
the last and worst day of this heat wave.
Of this heat wave. Okay.
I don't know if there are any more coming. Don't look at me. I'm not the weather bureau. That's all I've got. All I've got is tomorrow is going to be very hot.
No, but I mean, like when you say of this, it means like there might just be another one down the line. And isn't March when we're supposed to be stepping into autumn? Like what is going on right now?
You would think so.
Hmm.
You would think by now things are starting to get cooler. That's why I read that story about that Taylor Swift thing. In Kansas City,
yep.
I mean, -33 with a wind chill.
That is nuts.
I think there were some people yesterday going, please bring me some of that.
Yeah. Can we have a few snowflakes?
Careful what you wish for because you're going to miss this heat when winter's here.
Yeah. And if
this summer
is any indication, perhaps winter might just be as bad as this summer was hot. So we don't know.
Let's hope not. Okay, it's 7 o'clock. We'll be back in a moment with Democracy 101. Don't go anywhere. It's a busy morning on cliffcentral.com. Big thank you to Claude for popping in. for the window seat. And we've got Lucanio coming in just a moment or two to talk a little bit about democracy and about the elections and about what you need to know. And also we'll talk voter apathy, which is the last time we had him on. Yeah. Why are so many people still, despite the stakes being so high, how much worse must their lives get before they'll eventually get up off their asses and go and vote? We'll find out. We'll see how many people do stay away and couldn't care less. And you know what? Like by now, those people we just got to give up on, don't you think? There's nothing else. What else are we meant to do for them?
Yeah, it's amen.
Back in a second.